Caterpillar joins the Prophet's Parade.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to the Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. The big equipment maker Caterpillar just reported earnings. We'll check in with the big cat and other public companies. But before we go there, the stock market has just started trading. Where's Wall Street? The Nasdaq and the S&P 500 are off a tenth of a percent, but the Dow is up 21 points. It's at 11,225. Caterpillar is up 4% on that positive earnings news. And Hertz is up 16% now. Hertz is buying Dollar Thrifty to create a rental car colossus and make Avis try even harder. Stocks are up in Europe and Asia today as well, especially in Japan, where the Nikkei vaulted 2.33%. Okay, let's say good morning to Chief Investment Strategist Sam Stovall at S&P Equity Research. He's with us live from New York. Hello, Sam.
Good morning, Bill.
So Caterpillar checks in with better-than-expected earnings. They are the king of machinery and engines. So does that mean companies are building more stuff again?
Well, yes. Caterpillar, also we got report from Whirlpool today, and what they're basically showing is that the global economic recovery is taking hold and that we're actually starting to see an improvement in corporate earnings, not just a slowdown in their decline.
And how do Caterpillar and Whirlpool fit in with the mess of earnings we've gotten over the past several days? We've had dozens of big companies open their books this month. How is corporate America doing?
Corporate America seems to be doing pretty well. The expectation is that we're going to be seeing a very sharp increase in year-over-year corporate profit growth in this first quarter, and that for all of 2010, we're likely to see a 40% improvement in corporate earnings.
40% improvement. And the big question on people's minds is, does this mean these companies are ready to begin hiring once again?
Well, that's the big question mark, because we are seeing that corporate profits are improving, but we're not seeing corporate sales improving by as much. So I think we're likely to see us still hiring be fairly slow until we start to see the sales start to pick up as well.
Yeah, and just in a few more seconds, Sam, not everybody knows immediately profit versus sales. What do you mean when you say profits might be up but sales are not?
Well, sales are what people call top line. That's the money that comes in. And then based on what it costs you to produce and ship the items that you make, that filters down to the bottom line or earnings. Mm-hmm. So sometimes earnings can be improved simply by reducing your costs. And sometimes, unfortunately, employment is a cost.
Right. Sam Stovall at S&P Equity Research. Thank you, Sam.
My pleasure.
On Capitol Hill, senators are preparing for a showdown today on financial reform, that legislation meant to prevent another crisis. President Obama last week called on the Senate to pass the bill, but Republicans this morning say more work needs to be done. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is live in Washington. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning.
So what's in the bill and why the showdown today?
In a word, Bill, derivatives. Senate Banking Committee Chairman Chris Dodd has apparently agreed to a compromise on these very complicated investments. Now, they are blamed for helping cause the financial crisis. They get their name from the fact that they're derived from something else, like corn. A derivative could be a contract to sell corn at a certain price in the future, or a bet on whether mortgages bundled into securities will lose value. Dodd has been shepherding the bill through to the Senate, and there are reports this morning that he's agreed to a provision that would require banks to spin off their derivatives business.
Yeah, and what's that about? What's the advantage of spinning off derivatives?
Well, remember too big to fail? Partly this is to keep banks from getting too big. I talked about this with Joel Naroff of Naroff Economic Advisors.
What the Senate is trying to do in this bill is to get at both the riskiness issue and the too big to fail issue, but clearly it's going to cost the banks money because those at times can be very, very profitable arms of their business.
And Naroff says we're talking hundreds of millions, possibly billions of dollars. Also under this bill, derivatives would move to an open public exchange.
And what is the taxpayer's interest in all this?
Well, the bill is supposed to prevent another financial crisis and another bank bailout. Under the bill, banks would lose their eligibility for federal loans and guarantees if they didn't spin off their derivatives trading. And that's because the federal government doesn't want to be on the hook again for risky behavior that could lead to massive losses.
Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thanks.
You're welcome.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, April 26th at Marketplace.org. A U.S. court today starts sifting through one of the key events of the financial crisis, the collapse of Lehman Brothers. A bankruptcy judge will consider whether the British bank Barclays took advantage of the Wall Street free fall and ripped off Lehman's creditors. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Barclays bought Lehman's U.S. brokerage business days after the company failed in the fall of 2008. The British bank paid less than $2 billion and then made $11 billion on the deal. Barclays says it took the risk and earned the reward. David Buick of BGC Partners in London agrees. He says when most investors were panicking, the British bank bought the Lehman assets fair and square.
I have to say that Barclays deserved the most enormous amount of credit for having the courage to do so. It was a very dramatic time, and, you know, most people financially thought the whole place was imploding.
But Lehman's creditors say this was an unfair windfall. In effect, Barclays stole their assets. The court case, which begins in the US today, is likely to drag on for months, with a ruling expected by the end of the year. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
President Obama and Yahoo co-founder Jerry Yang meet at the podium in Washington today. The president is holding a summit on entrepreneurship that's focused on promoting economic ties with Muslim nations. From the entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has that.
Last year, during his trip to Cairo, President Obama called for better ties with the Muslim world. Today's gathering of entrepreneurs and economic development types from more than 50 countries is the follow-up. Tom Rue of the Kauffman Foundation helped organize the event.
There are entrepreneurs thriving in those parts of the world, but they certainly are the micro minority, considered by their governments kind of fringe players, fringe elements.
To help these fledgling businesses grow, the U.S. will offer money, mentoring, and technical support. The obstacles are huge, from bureaucracy to restrictions on women in business. Still, Tom Rue says there's opportunity for U.S. firms.
I had the chance to meet the entrepreneur that launched Muxlim.com. Think of them as the Facebook equivalent for the Muslim world. And they, in fact, are coalescing tremendous purchasing power and opportunity for advertisers.
There's a lot of potential here. Not one Muslim country makes the list of top U.S. trading partners right now. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Los Angeles has long been a trendsetter. Could it now be the first major American city to file for bankruptcy? LA's mayor says no way, but doubters say his budget solutions fail to address LA's biggest problem, its money-losing pension system that covers benefits for nearly 36,000 people. The quickest way to fix that problem, skeptics say, is to declare the city insolvent. Chris Richard has the story.
One of those skeptics is money manager Alex Rubalcava, who's been warning about LA's high pension costs for years. He says the retirement funds are supposed to pay for themselves with profits from investments, but Rubalcava says returns have been less than half the fund's projections for the last decade, leaving the pensions badly underfunded. This year's $1 billion city bailout is projected to triple.
The increase from $1 billion today to $3.5 billion a few years from now is greater than the combined budgets of LAPD, Los Angeles Fire Department, the Sanitation Department, the City Attorney Department, Transportation, Rec and Parks, and Street Services. So how we are going to operate our city? Absent bankruptcy? I don't know.
Some business leaders agree. Stuart Waldman is president of the Valley Industry and Commerce Association. He says his members are growing impatient with elected officials' reluctance to face business facts.
Most business people understand that if you can't run your business, you need to reorganize. And unfortunately, it may take something as drastic as bankruptcy for the government to run more efficiently.
Backers of the bankruptcy option hope to follow the example of nearby Orange County. It filed bankruptcy in 1994 after losing more than $1.5 billion in bad investments. County officials used the process to cut spending sharply and reorganize their debt. But in Los Angeles,
the mayor said that he will not allow the city to go bankrupt on his watch.
Sarah Hamilton is press secretary to Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. She says a filing would mean surrendering control of the city's assets. Villaraigosa is not about to be the first big city mayor in the country to do that.
He's even said it would be akin to using an atom bomb on a riot. It's just not an option that he is considering.
Bernard Parks, chairman of the city council's budget and finance committee, doesn't see it that way.
I don't think you can say Bankruptcy is not an option, so therefore we'll ignore the possibility. We need to know what are the ramifications, what are the requirements once you get into it.
Leading business groups have the same questions. The Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce has started studying the possible effects of a bankruptcy filing. In Los Angeles, I'm Chris Richard for Marketplace.
New York City residents tend to drive less than other urban dwellers, and now the city is touting a report that shows their resistance to the car saves them billions of dollars a year. Andrea Bernstein reports from WNYC, not everyone in New York is feeling so lucky.
New York City isn't the most car-friendly place in the world. It's not unusual to see cars bumper to bumper stretched out for blocks. Still, most people in New York aren't driving. They're taking the subway, so much so that the city transportation commissioner, Jeanette Sadiq Khan, likes to brag at conferences.
It's no wonder that New Yorkers have one-third the carbon footprint of the average American. So if you're really serious about saving the planet, just move to New York.
But now comes a report showing New Yorkers have a new reason to gloat about their relatively car-independent existence. Because so few people drive every day, the average is pulled down to 9 miles a day. Nationally, that figure is about 25 miles a day. The result? New York City residents save $19 billion a year, and most of that stays in New York.
Because we don't produce cars, and we don't produce gas.
Unlike Houston, where city residents drive the most, but that's an oil town. Joe Courtwright, an economist with the group CEOs for Cities, wrote the report. He says cities everywhere can save by getting more people to ride transit.
Transit isn't just sort of an amenity for the good times. It actually has some really significant contributions to the well-being of local residents and the well-being of the local economy.
Okay, but is that real money moving through the economy or theoretical money?
It is absolutely real money. It's money that if you did not have the kind of transit system you have, you did not have the kind of density, people would have to be laying out more money every day for cars and gasoline.
So are New Yorkers feeling richer? Not exactly. Down in the subways, a banker who'd only give his name as Jim said the dividend isn't taking something into account.
Cost of living here, so it's not as good a deal as it sounds.
Still,
if you live in the city, it makes more sense to take the subway.
In New York, I'm Andrea Bernstein for Marketplace.
A climate change bill was supposed to be unveiled today in the Senate, but a key Republican senator has pulled out of the process, and that unveiling has been indefinitely postponed. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins has that.
Businesses say delays put their plans in limbo. Jim Owen represents Edison Electric Institute. That's a trade group for utility companies.
As our industry CEOs gaze out over the horizon, they see a lot of challenges going forward in terms of what kind of power plants to build and where to build them.
And Owen says those CEOs need to know what to expect from climate change legislation before they invest. There were reports the bill would have provided billions for upgrades on coal-fired power plants. There were also loan guarantees for nuclear plants. Kate McMahon of Friends of the Earth says those incentives made the bill
a complete disaster zone.
She was unhappy with the way the bill derailed regulations already in the works.
This is a really good time for us to kind of step back and reassess the situation and figure out what we really need rather than bargaining and playing all these politics.
She says she prefers smaller bills that target specific industries. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And remember General Motors in the 80s when they were still rock-like?
America is still the land of rugged individualists.
But GM has now parted ways with Campbell Ewald, the ad company responsible for this and the Chevy Heartbeat of America campaign. About time, too, since the company turned out to be more like gravel, and if GM's the heartbeat of America, we should be on bed rest. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.